All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is another Q&A episode where I will be answering your listener questions dealing with the Atlanta Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, I am the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is a Q&A, a Monday mailbag episode where people sent in questions, not just over this weekend, but there are some questions I missed from last week's I will do my best to answer as many of those questions over the next 25 minutes as I can. And what will happen probably on Tuesday is we'll do something that I haven't done in quite some time. But any questions I do not get to, and I know there will be some that I will not get to on today's episode, will be answered on a leftover mailbag article that will be posted on FalcFans.com. I used to post these on LockedOnFalcons.com. That website is no more. But FalcFans.com is going strong, and there will be content on FalcFans.com throughout this offseason. I will only promise maybe like six articles of content this offseason, but that is six more than that has appeared over like the last 12 months on that website, besides me basically posting the podcast. So that is something to get excited again. FalcFans.com is back from the dead. So you can look forward to that. And if you're wondering, wait, Aaron, how do I submit these questions? I'm listening to this podcast for the first time. I want to submit my questions in future episodes. Well, my good friend in person that is so curious about this specific topic, you can do so via Twitter. Locked On Falcons is the show's Twitter page. You can do so via Facebook. That's Locked On Falcons as well over there. Give us a like while you're there. You can do so via email address. That's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the name of that address. Or you can leave a comment at FalcFans.com while you're going over there checking out the draft interest tracker or the leftover mailbag. You can leave a comment there and I'll get to it as well there. So there you have it. Enough preamble. Let's jump into the show. Our first question comes from KXI at Zan Sumrall on Twitter. He asks, since you don't live in Georgia, how did you become a Falcons fan? Just a sucker for pain? Well, I have told the story on this podcast multiple times, but probably I say it like once a year. And Zan, you probably don't listen to every episode, so that's fine. Or you don't memorize every detail about me. I don't know why you would choose not to do that, but, you know, to each their own, I guess. But the basic nutshell is when I was 8 years old, around 8 years old, my grandfather informed me that I had a cousin that played for professional football, and he happened to play for the Atlanta Falcons at the time. He shortly thereafter stopped playing for the Atlanta Falcons, went on to play baseball. You may have heard of this person. His name is Brian Jordan. I think he's like my second cousin twice removed or something like that. I have not had the pleasure of meeting him in my lifetime. I've met other members of his family. You know, he was out playing baseball for like 9 months of the year back in those days. And so I never got that opportunity. But basically, I decided at that age, you know, prior to that point, I was just sort of your typical whimsical 8-year-old that just like picked teams because I like the name or I like the colors or I'm eight and I just don't have reasons for these things. And so prior to that, I was just constantly picking a team, and I decided I'm going to be a mature adult right now and pick the Falcons and root for them because my cousin plays for them. And that's a terrible life choice. I think, you know, as for being the sucker for pain, I think we're all suckers for pain if we continue to support and root for this team in a post-Super Bowl 51 world. But it is what it is. You know, sometimes I sit here and say, oh, well, it can't get any worse than that. And then I sit there like, I'm sorry, football gods. That was not a challenge. That is not a challenge at all. So it definitely can get worse for that. And I will count my blessings, dear, powerful, almighty football gods. Davon Wilson at DWizzy1997 on Twitter asks, since you believe that the fullbacks will be the Falcons' best bet. How would you feel the Falcons got Riley Ridley in the third round, considering that he is the 10th best wide receiver? Also, could you expand on the Falcons' best offense scheme that could dominate the NFL? Well, first off, I don't think Riley Ridley is an option in round three, because I expect Riley Ridley to be a late first round or second round pick when all is said and done. I think, you know, obviously that depends a little bit on how fast he runs at the combine, how well he tests. I think he'll jump a lot higher than the 4 inches that his brother Calvin jumped at the combine, so I think that will help. I think he'll run reasonably well as well. So I think he'll be helped by the combine, and when all is said and done, I think he might be considered probably one of the five or six top receivers in this draft class, which typically means he's pretty safe bet to be a top 50 pick. Look, I'd be in favor. I think Riley Ridley is a really good player. I think you can make a case that he's like the second or third best wide receiver in this draft class. So I wouldn't be against the Falcons adding him to the roster. But as far as hoping, you know, thinking that's going to happen in round three, I would doubt that. As far as expanding on what I was talking about, I don't know what else you want me to say. I would say, I guess the gist of what it seems like you're asking me to expand on is just, I just think the Falcons need to pick an identity and run with it. You know, if they want to be a two tight end heavy offense, then go out there and let's upgrade the tight end position and get two really good tight ends this offseason. We already have one in Hooper. Let's get a second guy. If that means using a third round pick on a tight end, great, wonderful. No problem about it. I get it. I'm all for it. If you want to be some version of the Shanahan offense, which again, as I've mentioned previously on my Locked On Fullbacks podcast last Friday, which I think that means investing a little bit more in the fullback position than the Falcons have done so over the last 2 years. You know, both fullbacks that the Falcons have signed to basically who wound up being their fullbacks, and Derek Coleman and Ricky Ortiz, were out of football for like the 9 months prior to the Falcons signing them. You know, that's basically, in my opinion, the essentially scraping the bottom of the barrel to get your fullback. And if you want to continue to use the fullback more than, you know, I don't know, what, 75 to 85% of the league, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So that's really what it is for me, at least, in terms of like specific details about like this would be the perfect offense. Like, I don't really have a preference. I just want them to pick a side and let's go, you know, as opposed to just sort of dancing and being like, oh, I don't know what I want to do. Because that's what it seems like they're being right now. Next question comes from Brian at Your Homeboy Brian. He asks, how do you feel about the Falcons hiring a new special teams coordinator for the 2019 season and firing Keith Armstrong? Do you think it's an upgrade? What was change necessary? Do you think Bosher and Money Matt's Bryant jobs are safe? I have no real feelings on the new special teams coordinator, Ben Kotwicka. I was a defender of Keith Armstrong in large part due to the fact that I think he got blamed for things that weren't in his control, like a guy missing a block or a guy missing a tackle or Justin Hardy just not being a good punt returner. Like, that was evidence when he was drafted at East Carolina. I don't think it's, I've given reasons why I think Justin Hardy continued to be the punt returner, but whatever. As far as, you know, I'm curious to see what Ben Kotwicka, I don't like him just because I don't like his name and it's hard for me to pronounce. So he's off on the bad foot that way. But I'm curious to see what he does and whether or not he is better than Keith Armstrong. Whether, you know, because what does a special teams coach do? That to me is a question that's not an easy question to answer. According to a lot of Falcon fans, he controls every aspect of special teams, good or bad. So if something good happens, it's because the special teams coach willed it into existence. If something bad happens, it's because the special teams coach is terrible at his job and, you know, he willed it into existence once more. I don't think that's the case, but in terms of like specifics on what I'm supposed to be evaluating the special teams coach on, what is it? Guys making tackles, guys making blocks, guys making field goals? You know, guys getting big gains on kicks and punts? Is it making personnel decisions when the head coach has power over personnel? You know, is it the special teams coach marching Dan Quinn's offense and demanding you go out there and get me the best return specialist out there in the league? Again, I don't know. So for me, I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. Ever since I started reviewing games of the Falcons back in 2009, Keith Armstrong has been the special teams coach. So I'm curious to see what Katwika does that is different from what Keith Armstrong has done over the last decade, because he's the only person I ever know. As for Brian and Bosher, I hope their jobs are safe. I would be very distraught if they are not safe. It doesn't make any sense to me. But look, it's a post-Patrick DeMarco world, and I will never put anything past the Falcons to make terrible roster decisions by letting good players go just so that they can pinch pennies. Like, again, nothing is impossible as far as that goes. And that's basically what it is for me with Brian and Bosher. Like, to me, the only reason that Matt Bryant should be in quote-unquote jeopardy is if he retires, which is obvious. That to me is the only reason why he was Falcon in 2019. And as for Matt Bosher, like, I don't understand that. Like, he's been solid. He didn't have a great season last year, but he was solid for the most part. He was definitely better in the second half of the season, made improvements. So I don't understand why people are like, we need to get rid of Matt Bosher. If Matt Bosher is a problem, he's got 1 year left on his contract, then you let him play out the contract and you move on from him in 2020. Cutting him now, just to me, is like, why? For what reason? So you can save $2.5 million against $190 million salary cap? Like, that's going to be the difference between something happening and not something happening? I just don't think so. There's other ways that you can save that type of money in my eyes, but just to cut a punter that is an above average to good punter and has been so for like 8 years, like, it doesn't make any sense in my eyes. So, but you look, I can never trust the Falcons. Never, ever trust the Falcons. But that being said, there is one thing that you can trust, and that is the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcast, your NBA team, every day. All right, Devon Wilson at DWizzy1997 asks, top free agent targets for free agency this year, positions needed in top targets. Devon, I'm going to punt that question to late February, early March to the most part. But in terms of needs, I think it's clear the Falcons need trench help. I think they need to add at least one skilled position player on offense, whether that's a wide receiver or a tight end, a fullback or whatever. I think they also need to sort of supplement their depth on the back end at linebacker and the secondary. But, you know, the main needs are offensive and defensive lines. And we'll talk about maybe some targets as we get closer to March, as I do a little bit more research as far as that goes about guys in free agency. Our next question is from Jeff Bischoff at BishoJ on Twitter. If you indulge me, what does your dream offseason look like for 2019? Well, to be honest with you, Jeff, at this point in the offseason in late January, I don't really have one. I've already sort of put out my wish list for who I would want the team to sign as along the defensive line to fix their defensive line issues. But I haven't really done enough research at the other positions where I think the Falcons could or should address in order to sort of answer this question. So I'll try to remember to put the link to that D-line specific tweet in the show notes at FalFans.com for this episode. If any of you missed it, which I'm sure many of you did. But yeah, basically similar to Devon, I'm just going to have to punt. And to be honest with you, the whole like dream offseason thing, I just, you know, not to sound overly jaded and bitter and whatnot, but it's just one of those things where it's just like I don't necessarily indulge in those types of fantasies because I think it is just kind of a fantasy. One of the things I've learned from covering this team for as long as I have, whether it's been podcasting for 8 years, whether it's been blogging about the team for 12 going on 13 years, and whether it's been, you know, being a jerk on message boards for 21 years, I think now at this point, like I've just learned over the years that they don't do what I want them to do. So getting my hopes up about like sort of constructing a dream offseason is just kind of like, yeah, it's a interesting exercise. I do it mostly like in terms of evaluating free agency because I want to have a larger knowledge of who's good in the NFL. And thus, if you know, like, who are the top 10 guards in free agency, so when a team pays, you know, your number six guard $40 million and the team pays your number three guard $10 million, you understand, like, the economics of the league better and who's getting good value and potentially going to get better return on their investment. That's why I do it. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's one of those things where I've learned over the years is that they never do what you want them to do. And, you know, I will have opinions about these various things. And I'm sure over the next 7 weeks between now and the start of free agency, and probably roughly 30 or so podcasts that I will do in that period of time, I will probably over, you know, what, 900 hours of podcast, I will probably divulge who I think are some of the my preferred options in free agency. But at this point in time, it's just kind of like, eh, we'll see what happens. I feel like, for me at least, my job is not necessarily to be like, here's the guys the Falcons should have signed. It's just more like, okay, here are the guys the Falcons did sign, and here are my opinions on this, because I think that's ultimately what you guys want to hear, as opposed to sort of the dream fantasy scenarios of, oh, imagine if the Falcons did this. Because, look, I can sit here and, again, jaded and cynical and pessimistic as I am, but, like, what I want the Falcons to do, I know they're not going to do. So it's just like, eh, whatever. We'll see. Jeff's next question is, when will Grady Jarrett get done, and will the Falcons have to use the franchise tag to make it happen? Well, I'm 95%, if the Falcons do have to use the franchise tag, I'm 95% certain that the deal will get done by the July 15th deadline later this summer. As far as them getting a deal done before the franchise tag deadline or before the league year starts on March 13th, I think the deadline for when you can tag a player is March 5th. And I think you still have those 8 days after that to still get a deal done before the league year starts. But I'm not as up on what the rules are for franchise tags, because it's been like 7 years since the Falcons had to use one. But in terms of, like, you know, confidence that they'll get a deal done before mid-March, I'm like 54% competent or whatever. I feel like the contract that Grady Jarrett's going to sign shouldn't be that big a hurdle, but it's just dependent on how willing the Falcons are to bend over backwards for his contract demands. I think we have a question later on in the episode specifically about, or, you know, coming up in a moment, so I'll sort of answer what I think his contract is going to look like. On this next question, which comes from Spencer Williams, at Jevic7026 on Twitter, my friends and I are discussing Grady Jarrett. I said give him a contract or franchise tag him. Don't let him hit the open market. They say offer him $10 million or let him go because he doesn't make a difference. Do you believe he makes a difference? If so, how? Yes, I believe he makes a difference. I imagine your friends are probably of the mindset that because the Falcons' defense was so bad, Grady Jarrett doesn't make a difference in terms of making it good. You know, in terms of how he makes a difference, I mean, look, let me count the ways. He's one of the better defensive tackles in the league at creating pressure. He's very disruptive against the run. He didn't have as many tackles for loss this year as he did last year, but he improved immensely in terms of generating pressure and getting after the quarterback this season. Does his disruptive capability single-handedly make the Falcons into a good defense? No. But does anybody's? No. Like, even Aaron Donald, who was amazing this year and had arguably one of the greatest defensive seasons of all time, doesn't make the Rams into a good defense. Now, the Rams are basically a league-average defense, roughly around there, maybe even arguably below-average defense. And probably if you remove Aaron Donald from that, they would probably be at the bottom of the league. But, you know, he doesn't single-handedly make them good. And I would argue that Grady Jarrett, you know, doesn't make the Falcons into, you know, ideally they would be a below average defense if other players were healthy, like the Rams. But I would say if you remove Grady Jarrett from this year's Falcons defense, that not only they would go from being one of the worst in the league this season to one of the worst in the league potentially historically of all time, and certainly be in the running for one of the worst Falcons defenses that we've seen in recent history, even going back to that 2014 season, which I think was a historically bad defense. So they could have been challenging that defense. So I think Grady Jarrett does make a difference. You just don't see it because of reasons. As far as what I think Grady Jarrett's going to make, if your friends are like, basically, he don't give him more than $10 million, well, they're going to be in for a rude awakening, because I think ultimately Grady Jarrett is going to make a lot more than $10 million. My expectation is his contract is going to be somewhere north of $16 million a year. I'm expecting his contract to be like a 5-year contract worth $80 to $90 million, somewhere in that range. and probably have somewhere between 35 and 45 million in guaranteed money. So, you know, I'm just sitting here saying, like, if you think Grady Jarrett is not worth that type of money, then I'm looking forward to all the Twitter takes come March or July when that contract gets done. So that will be entertaining for me at the very least. So wrap your heads around that. Prepare yourselves. That's all I'm sitting here saying. Now, maybe he comes in lower than that. And if he does, then I will sit here and say, I think we got a bargain. If he comes in higher than that, I'm like, well, yeah, I lowballed it. Yeah. He got more than I thought he would, but I'm not going to sit here and say he shouldn't make his money. So we'll see about that. All right. There is more to come on today's episode, but I should let you guys know that there are two podcasts devoted to the big game this weekend. The Locked On Patriots podcast with Mark Schofield, the Locked On Rams podcast with Brad Motter. Check them out wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. So Jeff Bischoff has another question. Out of all the offensive linemen who were not week one starters in 2018, who, if any, have the best shot at competing for and potentially earning a starting role next year? Further, if we only replace two starters by bringing in new people, which position could potentially be replaced internally? I think it seems like your first question is basically asking me, among Garland, Schweitzer, Sambrelo, Gano, and Beatles, who do I think could potentially be starters in 2019? Well, I'll start off saying I think there's a 0% chance Beatles is, because I think there's a 0% chance. Well, I shouldn't say there's a 0% chance. Again, you can never put anything past the Falcons. But I don't think he'll be back next year. I would probably put Gano at 1% just because I think, you know, he'll be in camp and there's weird stuff can happen. But I think he's competing for a backup spot next year. Garland's probably at like 5%. I think the Falcons see and value Garland as a reserve. And he is a free agent, and he's not guaranteed to come back, but I think he probably will. But he's probably just going to be a backup. I think his opportunity to start was 2 years ago, and he missed that opportunity. And certainly, while he's played well at times over the last two seasons, I don't think he's played well enough for the Falcons to be like, oh, yeah, we should let Ben Garland compete for a starting spot again. With Sambrelo, it's probably like 10% chance that he is. For me, the only scenario where I can sort of wrap my head around Sambrelo competing for a starting spot and not throwing up in my mouth is basically if the Falcons decide to cut Ryan Schrader, they re-sign Sambrelo, again, another free agent. They wind up using their first round pick on a right tackle because that guy's a rookie. You know, Sambrelo takes most of the first team reps during OTAs and mini camp and maybe the first couple of weeks of training camp, you know, but by the time we get to the third preseason game, that rookie has sort of overtaken Sambrelo and we can be like, oh yeah, the rookie won the job, even though we kind of knew from the moment we drafted him that the rookie was going to win the job, but technically, you know, Sambrelo still had a shot. Like that to me is the only way I can sort of stomach the idea of the Falcons being like, oh yeah, we're Sambrelo's competing for a starting spot. Like I don't have a problem with Sambrelo competing for a backup spot, but starting, we'll get there. And I think other than that, I think Schweitzer's probably got the best shot of those guys. I'd probably say it's like 35% or so. For Schweitzer, and I think it could be at left guard, more than likely at right guard. I think right guard is probably the spot where internally where you could see a Wes Schweitzer type of player starting for the Falcons next year. Adam King's question at aking3221 asks, with Fusco only being a $750K cap hit with $4 million in savings as a June 1 cut, would you expect him back? I don't think the June, post-June, pre-June 1 designation is going to really matter that much as far as Fusco's status. I think the difference between him being a pre-June cut and a post-June 1 cut is about $750,000 in savings, which amounts to basically one veteran minimum player. And I don't think the Falcons' salary cap situation is going to be that dire to the point where they're going to need that type of space come June, July, or whatever to get their rookie signed. I think if the Falcons are going to cut Fusco, they'll just cut him whenever they feel like cutting him. As far as him being a cut, I don't think they will cut him before the start of free agency. However, I do think there is a chance that they could cut him after the draft in a similar way to what the Redskins did with Chris Chester 3 years ago after their 2015 draft when they drafted Brandon Scherff and Ari Quanjo, and then they cut Chris Chester after the draft, and the Falcons wound up scooping him up thereafter. And I could see that sort of scenario, that if the Falcons, you know, the scenario I'm sort of envisioning is the Falcons wind up, you know, getting, solidifying both their left and right guard spots, either via free agency and or the draft, and then be like, oh yeah, we don't need Brandon Fusco because we want to go with whoever these new guys that we brought in free agents, or these young, you know, talented early round guards that we drafted, and we don't need Fusco, so let's just cut him and take that savings and use that to sign our rookies or whatever the case may be. I could see that scenario of him being cut, but outside of that, I would be surprised if they cut him for any other reason other than that. BLS5856 asks, right tackle, left guard, right guard, who and do we have valuable starters? I'm assuming what you're asking me is who do I think will start at those spots, as opposed to whether I think we have valuable starters there, because the answer to that latter thing is obviously no. I think, you know, if we want to play the semantics game, I think you can make the case that we have serviceable starters right now at those three spots, but I don't think there's anybody currently on the roster that the Falcons should be sort of married to beyond them being basically a one-year stopgap in 2019 at any of those spots currently on the team. And I don't consider a one-year stopgap to be a valuable starter. I consider a one-year stopgap to be a serviceable starter. I'm looking at you, Mohamed Sanu. Kidding, not kidding. I guess for me, I would say right now, my expectations is that we will have a new right tackle and a new right left guard. My guess is that one of those will come in free agency. I think the left guard makes the most sense right now, as far as the one that comes in free agency, and the other will come in a draft. Again, I think the right tackle makes the most sense as far as that goes, in terms of where I think the value is at those positions. But again, we're still early in the process. And again, knowing the Falcons, they will always throw you a curveball and they'll be like, well, you thought the value was drafting a right tackle, we're drafting the left guard. And you thought the value was signing a left guard, well, we're going to sign a right tackle. So you never put anything past the Falcons. I think as far as the right guard goes, I think Fusco and Schweitzer will probably be the guys primarily competing at those spots coming this summer. Haim Lebowitz asked, two questions. Why? First, why are almost all NFL-related podcasts with no cussing? Is that league mandated? And two, besides Locked On Network, do you listen to any other podcasts? The first question is not league mandated. From your Twitter profile, Haim, at Haim Leb on Twitter, I'm taking it you're from Israel. And so I don't know how if it works differently in Israel as it does in the United States. But in the United States, podcasts stem from U.S. radio. And so you're not allowed to cuss on the radio. And so that's just sort of carried over into podcasts to a certain extent. The other thing is that you have corporations, you have advertisers, you have sponsorships. And generally speaking, if you're the type of podcast that is free with your usage of the English language and vocabulary and use colorful vocabulary, that you're going to also broach a number of topics that can be considered interesting. And those topics can also be considered offensive and get you in hot water with sponsorships. And so therefore, if you want to, generally speaking, if you have sponsorships like the Locked On Podcast Network, it does, you tend to try to stay away from those colorful topics and words because it's more likely to do more harm than good. To answer your second question, I do listen to other podcasts, although very few of them are football ones. Since I tend to be very immersed in football on a daily basis, when I listen to a podcast for, you know, 30 minutes, an hour or more, I tend to want to escape football for that period of time. So the majority of the podcasts I listen to are like movie related podcasts or entertainment related podcasts or history podcasts or just general comedy podcasts where I can just sit around and laugh or whatever as two people, you know, talk and say colorful things. When I do listen to football-related podcasts, they tend to be slanted towards draft and in college football, just because that's a subject that I'm not as immersed in as I am with pro football. But probably the two pro football podcasts that I listen to most often are the Ross Tucker podcast and the Ringer NFL show, but I don't listen to either one of those on a regular basis. There may be like 3 or 4 weeks of time that go between when I listen to those, and sometimes I might listen to like three a week, and sometimes I may go 3 or 4 weeks without listening to them at all. So I am open to any suggestions if people have any podcasts that they also listen to, that they, or at least football podcasts, or general podcasts, that's fine. If you're like, oh, I listen to this great podcast that deals with entertainment and history and comedy all rolled into one. So this is the perfect podcast for you. If you want to suggest podcasts, by all means, tweet at me and or whatnot, or Facebook or wherever that you provide your feedback. Again, Locked On Falcons on Twitter, Locked On Falcons on Facebook, email address lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or you can leave a comment at falcfans.com. Let me know about what your podcasts are. There you have it, guys. That is our episode. There again, I will remind you that there are more questions that I know some of you submitted, and some of you are disappointed that I did not get the chance to answer, but I will try to answer those on the leftover mailbag episodes, which should be up on Tuesday morning on falcfans.com. And again, those of you know where to hit me up for future mailbag episodes. We're going to try to wrap up the offensive position reviews by getting to wide receivers, tight ends, and offensive line later this week. Hopefully we'll get all those done. I do want to get a potential guest to talk Senior Bowl and All-Star games. I'm hoping to get that done this week as well. So we might have a full schedule this week. So enjoy.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.